What's going on, my people? You're listening to The Score, an urban music education podcast hosted by Eric and Justin, where we discuss tips and strategies on how to become a more effective, compassionate, and culturally responsive music educator. What's going on, my people? This is Eric.
And this is Justin.
And we're your hosts for
The Score.
Welcome to episode 5.
Yay, yay.
We're going to talk about student leadership and how it relates to your music classrooms. So, Justin, kick us off. Let me know about some of the things that you did as a high school student, some of the leadership positions that you held.
Okay, so in high school, band-wise, I was vice president of the band. I was section leader for 2 years, my junior and senior year of the drumline and that whole thing. And then I was a part of this thing called the Culture Club. And it was this club where all different people of different races and cultures, we would meet. And then we were responsible for putting on, you know, different cultural theme programs, whether that's Black History, whether that was, you know, our Latino program, anything that dealt with the culture of America and people coming from different backgrounds, we would do that. So I was kind of like the creative lead in that. I would always come up with the programs. I would come up with, like, what type of music should be played? How would we reach out to different speakers and different things like that? And then as far as band, I was the section leader. So I was responsible for running rehearsals. You know, Mr. Taylor leaned on me heavy to make sure, you know, my section was in line. I made sure people were taking care of their music. I taught a lot of kids on that line and just made sure, like, I prided myself on making sure we looked right, we played correctly, we had discipline. A lot of the things that I'm doing now as a director, I can remember being very focused on those things as, you know, 15, 16-year-old, you know, section leader. So
nice. Now, did you go through, like, an audition process or an interview? Or?
Yes and no. I would like to say that my freshman and sophomore year, because quiet as kept, my sophomore year I could have been section leader, because we had some juniors and seniors, but they were super kind of immature. Mm-hmm. And I think Mr. Taylor was trying to get some more seriousness out of the section. But I think he didn't want to rock the boat. And so I kind of had to just buy my time. And so after that, it was like a little interview process and him letting me know, these are the things that I'm looking forward to. This is what I need you to do. This is what I want you to do. And after that, it was just, I was a section leader my junior year, and then my senior year, I was section leader again. So,
nice. Yeah. Did you have control over the front ensemble as well?
Yeah. Okay. So it was pretty much like I was there running rehearsal, especially my senior year, because we had a new director, my last 2 years rather, and he wasn't the best. So I was really responsible in making sure we had our stuff together. Like, people knew their music. I would call extra rehearsals after school, whatever we needed to do. I remember one time I really wanted us to work on making our cadences nice, tight, and, you know, all clean and stuff like that. So we got the drums. I asked Mr. Taylor, can we take the drums in a truck of one of the kids that was on the line? His name was Jay Gutowski, and he stayed right in the neighborhood next to Terry. So we got all the drums. I told everybody on the drum line, we meeting at Jay's house. We're going to go in the backyard, work out our music, and his parents made, you know, hot dogs and stuff. And it was kind of like a little community event, and it helped us really grow closer. And then we brought the drums back for school, and so
nice.
I
actually had the opportunity to be the founder of LULAC, which is the oldest and largest civil rights organization for Latinos.
Wow.
At Lamar High School, and then so I ended up being president of that council, the youth council, and then I ended up being actually the district director for youth in District 8 for that. At that time, it was the district for the entire city of Houston for LULAC. From there, my senior year, I also had the opportunity to create and found this organization, and it was a men's organization, a young man. And so we called it Lamar Caballeros, and Caballeros means gentleman. And so I was also a part of Nu Gamma Psi. It was a fraternity on campus. I came after my cousin Steven, who they referred to as Red Apple. And the reason being, for the Red Apple sale at Macy's and Foley's back in the day? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so we were known for wearing our polo boots and polo shirts, and so they always called him Red Apple.
Wow.
Unfortunately, my name was just Red Apple's cousin. you know, just some of that leadership experience then transferred into my participation in band. So my junior year, I was section leader, and then my senior year, I got the opportunity to be drum major. So technically, I think we were co-drum majors, but I pretty much operated as head drum major.
Right.
And part of that was I actually didn't try out for drum major my junior year. Mm. I was approached my senior year by my band directors, who actually, and I still remember this. It was business management and ownership, an elective course at Lamar. I was in the business magnet program. And they asked the coach who was teaching the class, can I speak to Eric real quick? They pulled me out into the hallway, and they were like, hey, man, so we need another drum major, and we want you to be drum major. And I was like, so do I need a, you know, audition? And they were like, so we're going to have a fake audition process, and you're going to audition, and we're just going to pick you.
Right.
Are you down? And I was like, yeah, I'm down. And, you know, to be honest, I don't remember why I didn't audition. I think I was kind of like caught up in like, man, I'm cool and
school life.
I was already DJing,
for sure.
and I was caught up, but in the social aspect of things, and I was a band hit all the way, but I don't know if I was completely bought into like doing the whole thing. And then when I got there senior year, I don't know, it was just different for me, and I was like, if I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna do this right.
Right.
And so that all of that experience kind of that culmination really helped me, and I can say my experience in LULAC was really what helped me.
Wow.
Now my public speaking, that was from DJing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're forced to talk on the microphone from I mean, my first gig, I remember it was a college graduation party, and they asked me to announce that you can now eat, you know what I mean, that the food is ready to, you know, and so you got to get on the mic, and nervously you're like, may I have your attention, please? And so the alone just getting like thrown in, and so that helped me develop. And so when I was in LULAC, I had to present the district report for these conventions, and I'd have to stand in front of like several hundreds of people and say, this is what LULAC Youth has done. And
that
alone helped me in just being able to speak in front of crowds and people. So taking that experience, what did you do as a middle school band director to implement in your band hall in regards to just giving students leadership positions or what have you? So walk us through that.
So when I took over Hamilton, I wanted to create student leadership positions to create ownership, right? So I think what we had there was just great culture. Like, kids practiced, kids knew what to do. But I knew that over time, those things would wane if kids really didn't have ownership. And so what I started doing was I had a sign up for leadership. And so I would post the list. Kids would, you know, sign the list. Or I would ask, like, who is interested in being a section leader? Flute, clarinet, saxophone, low brass, whatever, whatever. And part of it was not only ownership in the program, but also having people that echoed my voice of accountability, discipline, making sure the band hall was clean. And so when I picked these people out, I tried to pride myself on like two things. Were they quality players, and did they have the ability to like really be developed, right? So A, I want somebody that's respected on the instrument, but B, I want somebody that has a voice too. And so once I did that, it not only created ownership, but what I saw over years of doing it while I was there is that kids begin to take on my ideals and my burden as a director, if that makes sense. And they started to feel as much pain as I did when I might have been frustrated that kids are not practicing and we're not able to really get through this UIL piece, mm-hmm. or we're trying to get ready for our Christmas concert and kids are not putting together the music the right way, or maybe we're working through some different playing tests for, you know, dexterity and technical stuff, but kids are not practicing the way they need to. What it did was it made those, I was able to lean on those students to say, hey guys, your section, certain people are not coming, pulling their part, and it's going to affect us when we get to January and we start our mad dash for UIL. And so unbeknownst to me, man, like I always had the band hall open in the morning, and because of my beginner band situation and there were no, you know, every class was heterogeneous, I always was having some type of sectional to keep, to supplement and keep the pace and sequence for my beginners. So in the morning, my eighth graders and seventh graders would be in there. And what I saw was those leaders pulling people together that didn't know their music or hadn't been practicing or needed to learn their music a little bit more efficiently. And they were working with them. I can remember during January of 1 year of my teaching, we were working for UIL, and I had my schedule set. Like, I'm working with woodwinds this day. I'm working with brass this day. I was working with percussion on a Wednesday, going through our UIL program, working on music. And I saw one of the students who's now at Heights, and she's doing amazing. She called a whole sectional with the flute section. Like, I literally was walking into band hall. I was like, are y'all here practicing? Mm-hmm. She's like, yeah, I think we need to work on some of the things you talked about. And so they went in the robotics room. They had a metronome, and she was in there working, and she had made notes. She had talked, you know.
What grade was
down.
She in at the time?
She was eighth grade. She was in eighth grade. And so she had did that. Now, at no time did I say you should be calling private sectionals. Yeah. I just said, hey, let's hold people accountable. Make sure you have conversations with people. Develop relationships so you can, you know, have those moments where you can hold them accountable. And they did it, man, even to the point where I had a certain way where I liked the band hall to look like. So after morning rehearsal, I would always say, before y'all go to class, make sure you straighten these chairs, straighten these stands. You know, let's leave the band hall the way you found it. And at no point, sixth graders might have walked out because they new to the program. Seventh graders because they just seventh graders. But those kids would stay behind, fix things. Even when I would be at TMEA, you know what I'm saying? Like, they would let me know when I got back. We made sure things were the way they needed to be. And it became a culture. So when those kids left, the kids after them, the seventh graders had saw it. So they did it. Then the sixth graders saw it. So it was just, it just created this thing. And I remember one year I didn't make a big deal about section leaders. And kids were like, oh, are we going to do that? Like, yeah. Because they wanted it. They wanted to lead. They wanted to be known for, you know, being the face of the program. And so it helped me out in a lot of ways. They had their own little communication. So if I sent out emails to parents or if I made announcements in class, they made sure people were where they need to be. Even, you know, we would show up for a UIL performance or maybe just a performance in the community. And I would say, where is such and such? I'll call them right now. I'll text them right now. So it worked wonders, and I would advise any middle school director, even if you go into your first year, start developing. Maybe you don't do it big. Maybe you figure out three people in your top band that are accountable and that are responsible and give them some things that they can do. Organizing your music, making sure people have their music, doing binder checks, things like that. Kids love those things. So I
think a lot of people are afraid, especially at the middle school level, to implement leadership positions within young people. Whether they assume that they don't have the maturity, whether they assume they don't have just the overall structure to be able to do those things, I advocate as well. Because let me get your thoughts on this. What do you think about getting knuckleheads to get some like ownership, or I wouldn't say an official title,
right,
but, just giving them some things. Correct. What do you think about that?
I think that I learned that best from you. I think that. So I think with knuckleheads, we have to remember that they've been told that they can't do for so long that they're waiting for an opportunity to prove somebody wrong.
Yeah.
Like you told the story on, I don't know if it was the last episode where the kid wanted to print up his report card to show to Mr. Stevens. Because every teacher thought that he was going to fail and this, that, and the third. And I think when you empower them, we're trying to give kids experiences and let them see a part of themselves that maybe they didn't think was there. So this kid who's getting in trouble in math, getting in trouble in algebra, is coming to band and may not even be a part of the band class, but just there because of scheduling. When you say, hey, this is what I need you to do. Every time everybody comes in, I need you to make sure they have their music. I need you to check my role for me. And then I need you to pass out this music and organize my sight reading folders. They're going to do that faithfully, like, period. And once they've done that, now you're developing them to know, okay, the same way you can have that conversation, hey, what you do in my class, you have the ability to do in other classes, even though people say you can't.
Yep.
Right? So I would advise, you know, with wisdom, right? I mean, you can't put everybody on that. But those kids that maybe having some behavior problems or whatever the case may be, man, give them some tools. Give them something that they have leadership and duty over so they can make it their own. And now you holding them accountable on something that, hey, I thought you said you could do this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I'm all for it.
I think about, like, even just whether it be passing out new sheet music.
Yeah.
Or, you know, hey, can you do me a favor and write the date on the board? Those kind of things. And so be mindful of being able to give those responsibilities and tasks to quote unquote our term of endearment for knuckleheads.
Right.
And so if you be having issues, like, give them ownership, give them something to do. I'm a huge advocate of that. Additionally, we know that leadership is a huge, huge kind of talking point and construct within our profession. Especially at the high school level.
Yeah.
And so I think I think about some ways that some directors implement their leadership programs, and a lot of them appoint leaders.
Right.
And I think we need to be open to change that opportunity for all students, because when you appoint leaders, you might appoint the extrovert. And what's been hidden within your band program is that introvert that follows your rules, follows everything you've been telling them to do, and is just waiting for that opportunity to serve.
For sure.
And so, you know, can you take me through, can you think of one student that comes to mind when I say introvert that because of the systems and procedures that you put in place to be able to apply or be a leader, you know, who comes to mind? Like, you know, you can say just their first name or, you know.
Oh, that's easy. Myra Perez. Like, she is a student who was very, like, I mean, first day of band, sixth grade, very much to herself, not a very vocal person. But I think what you said is important. As directors, our job is not to see and develop the obvious, right? It's like studying a score. When I look at a score, I'm not looking for stuff that I see on the surface. Oh, these notes need to touch. There's a crescendo. I'm trying to find, oh, this chord, this is a different type of chord than this been in since measure one or whatever the case may be. And so I need to figure out where are some students that I, like, they need leadership or they need to be in leadership more than I need them to be in it, if that makes sense, right?
For sure.
I think that when she came into my band hall, she was just a student. She's a hard worker. She's going to do what you tell her to do. But she, at that point and stage in her life, she wasn't like, hey, you should be doing this. Hey, you know, she was just very much like, I'm going to do what I need to do. And I think me pushing her into those things and holding her accountable for her section, it transferred even to a greater height when she got to high school. And she, you know, is now flourishing on all different levels. But, I mean, that was easy. I mean, but I saw that. And had I looked over that and said, I don't really.
Or she's not ready.
Right, she's not ready. Maybe she'll get it in high school. Mm-hmm. Well, what if she doesn't get it?
Yep.
You know, it takes a director, it takes a special teacher to look and see. Because even as strong as you were, and even me, I mean, I was very vocal and personable. But Mr. Taylor had to kind of pull me in that direction. Mm-hmm. They had to come pull you in that direction of being, you know, being a leader. Because people like us, you and me, we don't need a title to do stuff.
For sure.
We're just going to get it done.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, if it needs to be done or if we think that it can be done a different way or a better way, that's what we're going to do. But then there's other people like Myers, like other students that you've developed, whether it's been at Heights, at Davis and Waltrip, where you're looking at them and saying, their next level is me pushing them into a very uncomfortable place. And she's not a very big talker, right? She doesn't really like to talk in front of a lot of people. But I think having that role has made her more accountable, more responsible, more vocal, being more in a place of communicating things and making sure it's helped her be on top of her game, too.
I love that because, the kids that we serve come from settings at times that experience lack at home.
Right.
Whether that be lack of even affirmation, of relationships, of motivation.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, and I don't blame the family. And I take that as an opportunity to say, you know what, I'm their teacher.
Yeah, yeah. You're an extension of the family.
Exactly.
And what their mother and father may not see, because it could be a blind spot or whatever, you're able to see that.
Correct.
You know,
and I think, you know, a lot of more of us need to be willing to take a chance on a kid.
Yeah.
Because, like, exactly what you said earlier was she needed, you know, me to push you into that leadership position as opposed to me needing her to serve.
Right.
And so what comes out of that is that, you know, you pull some untapped talent, if you will. And I think too many band directors are quick to go to the loudest person.
It's the easy route.
And it is. It's and at times, route. we are you don't see the effects that they really didn't do anything.
At all.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I've come to know, and I see it in students, but even in, like, adults, when I get to a school or even when we were working at Heights, when we were at faculty meetings or PD trainings, or even we went to, you know, band director trainings in the district, like, I could tell the people that weren't doing nothing because they just had so much to say.
Mm.
They just talking. And then when you actually go see their product or you're asking them about how they do or what they do, there's excuses or it was just all smoke and mirrors.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just very observant. I feel like you're the same way. Like, we kind of click on that. Like, we're two very observant people. And so what I observe from kids that talk very big and are super extra, you know, I'm interested to see their work. And so I like to find students that are working rather than talking. Because I can mold a worker. A talker really just, like, I got to tell you, it's our job as directors to say, okay, you're really not as good as you think you are.
Yeah.
So we gotta hone you down. We got to pull some of that down so we can get you where you need to be.
I love that because when you said that, you know, what comes to mind is a student that thought he had to be extremely vocal.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to redirect him.
Right.
Because
right.
we saw the talent in him.
Of course.
And we're like, hey, man, just keep your mouth shut
and do what,
and
you,
do what you need to do, and people are going to follow.
Right.
You know, obviously they did. And he ended up being section leader, and he's doing extremely well. When you think of people like that, you know, we have to at times direct their energy.
Yes.
And direct their intent, because the kids mean well.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they might be modeling what they think a leader is. And it's like, well, you got to be loud and you got to tell people what to do.
Yeah,
and, you know, and so they have this misconstrued idea and vision of, okay, this is what a leader is,
right,
you know? And so we've all seen the memes and the images of a leader versus a boss and that kind of thing. And so those images need to be put on by us.
Right.
To the students.
That's an amen. Because I think kids have a definition of something in their head, but we as their directors and teachers, we have to be the ones that lead them and saying, okay, no, that's not really a leader. This is what a leader is. And then, like you said, I need to walk into band hall and model that. So if one of the things we talked about when we were working together was that leadership is about serving. Like, you should be serving people you're leading. And I think we try to exemplify that as best as possible, whether that is, you know, taking a kid home after rehearsal, whether that's helping kids, you know, find solutions to certain family problems, or how to get to rehearsal, how to get to work, you know, making those advances or pursuing kids and making sure, like, hey, is everything okay? Like, I'm also here to serve you. And in serving you, I want to lead you in how to do this thing the right way.
Mm.
So I think that's quality.
As we take a break from our discussion, we're jumping into the segment called In Rotation. During this time, each of us will get an opportunity to share what we're currently listening to. Favorite artists, genre, album, playlist. If you have any recommendations, drop us a line on our social media platforms at PodTheScore or send us an email, podthescore@gmail.com. We look forward to hearing from you. In Rotation, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to let you know about an ensemble band that's called Ghost Note, and the leader of the band is Sput Spearwright. If you know about Sput, he's a drummer out of the Dallas area, and he's popular for his time there with Snarky Puppy. He's under the same label, but go check out his album of Ghost Note. It's called Swagism. Absolutely amazing. The stuff that they're doing is out of this world, and so go check it out.
All right, so first of all, I need to really up my In Rotation stuff, because I feel like Eric is dropping all of this, like, you know, jazz, you know, jazz fusion and this, that, and I'm always just coming with the ratchet. So I got more ratchet stuff, man. I'm jamming. Young Thug just dropped the album. I know you talking like he's an educator. Young Thug, So Much Fun. That's the name of the album. Here's why I like Young Thug. I think that he's very great. I'm real big on melodies. So I think what he does well is he captures melodies over very simplistic, you know, basic chord progression tracks, heavy drums. But the way he alternates between cadences and rhythms and all his melodic ideas, how he throws them on top of the music, to me is just, it's just amazing. Mm-hmm. So if you're really into that, if not, I would say even check it out. To all my people that, you know, you might have graduated in the 70s or the 80s, go check it out.
Yeah.
Go check it out. And I want to give a shout out to my coworker, good friend of both of ours. His name is Jordan Stevens, assistant director over at Hightower. And he was jamming some really dope music one day when we were in the office kind of planning for the upcoming year. And I walked in and I was like, man, what's this? He was like, oh, this is Black Orpheus. So I look it up. It's traditional Brazilian music, very eclectic. I mean, crazy rhythms, very organic melodies and things of that nature. So I gave you a little bit of both. I gave you some ratchet and I gave you some, you know, couture. So
yeah.
Check it out.
All right, we're back. And what comes to mind right now is the fact that we have some big names in our profession that facilitate leadership sessions. And, you know, whether that be Dr. Tim,
right,
Frank Kick, you can think of Frank Troika, you can think of just different SASE leadership student programs. Those, and I've been exposed to a lot of them. I've been, you know, learning from them. The one thing that at times bothers me is the accessibility for our kids to take part in that.
Yeah.
You know, I had to get a grant through a community organization, a nonprofit, when I was at Davis to be able to take kids to A&M Commerce.
Wow.
I can honestly say that was a huge paradigm shift in my program, because they were around kids, quite honestly, of other races. Mm-hmm. When I was serving that school, it was 97% lower income, economically disadvantaged. And a lot of them hadn't really traveled outside of the state nor outside of their zip code.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so now I'm thinking about the accessibility for our kids that don't have the money, because on average, those programs go, what, $350, $450? Yeah. And at times it would be $350 if you're, you know, commuting, or $450 mm-hmm. if you're a resident.
Right.
So I think there needs to be a platform. Now, you and I, Matt and, you know, Chris and a lot of the other guys, Jordan.
Yeah.
We've developed a system that allows us to reach even more kids.
Right.
And so when you think about going through leadership training with me at the last 2 years at Heights, what comes to mind? Like, what do you think are some of the takeaways of the things that we were able to do, not only with the training, but what the kids learned?
Two words: authenticity and action. So I'm a product of, I went to Texas A&M Commerce. I went to a leadership camp at U of H when I was in high school, because that was the thing. That's the culture. And I was talking to the staff at the school I currently work at, and talking about how do we supplement for our kids, right? Like, we may be able to get our drum majors to go to A&M Commerce, mm-hmm. but our section leaders, they may not have that money to put towards that. They may not be able to even leave for that long amount of time with, you know, doing things with their family, things of that nature. So how do we develop leaders? And I think we don't have to automatically do what the status quo is. And I think Frank Troika, Dr. Tim, all these people are great, but who knows your kids better than you?
Mm.
And so what I think we have to do is maybe come up with a system that says we can send three of our leaders out to this camp. They can bring back. We can in-house train these leaders and like a gumbo, just stir it all together and create it what best fits our program.
Yeah.
'Cause what works for Klein Collins, what works for Katie, what works for Tompkins may not work for Heights, or may not work for, you know, schools in a 4A program. But I'm a firm believer that everything you need is right there in your band hall.
So, you know, I think at times there's too much fluff in some of those trainings, because
I agree.
Whether it be the number of students that attend, I mean, because like hundreds of students attend, and then they get split up
right.
into little kind of
mm-hmm.
subgroups.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so one of the guys that we were able to fundraise for and then bring in, he told me, he said, you know, but are they teaching your kids how to teach?
Right.
And I was like, or are they getting this like pep rally and getting, you know, this euphoric
and
high?
It's just this emotive.
Coming back like, we're ready to go. And then
when
conflict hits them in the face, it's
boom.
Like, yeah, I don't want to do this anymore.
And that's why I think what we did those past years at Heights really worked. Like, we talked leadership. We developed them of how to deal with conflict, how to hold people accountable, how to be responsible. But we also said, this is the way you teach. For our program,
yeah.
It's different for everybody, how you want things to be shared. I can think of us doing a whole, you know, training on shared language.
Yeah.
Like, that's a big drop off between directors, leaders, and band students.
For sure.
The director says something, the leaders say something a little bit different, and now the band students hear
yep.
three to four different things.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't think you're going to get that if you go to Texas A&M Commerce. Now, by no means am I telling you not to send your kids there. What I'm saying is, you're still going to have to do some work. There's no one.
I agree.
There's not a fix-all.
Yeah.
Like, you could have a student take private lessons, but you still have to spend time teaching them how to apply a private lesson that's out of the context of an ensemble, out of the context of whatever you're working on, and then plug in everything they've been working out of the Arbenz book into class.
And so I think if we did have the funds, I would have sent our leadership
right.
off.
Agreed.
And then still do
exactly.
what we did.
Yeah.
Because...
Yeah.
You know, I think it's important to, you know, exactly going back what you said. You know your kids best.
Yeah.
And so I've seen Susie not do that well.
Right.
And so when I see her not do that well, okay, I need to address that. And here,
yeah.
and let me give you some examples and some opportunities to enhance you on that.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that I think you and I did well was the fact that we didn't discredit art leaders in front of the band.
No.
Especially
right.
our drum majors.
That's
you know
good.
What I mean?
Like, that's good.
I could think back of one of my drum majors at Davis.
Oh, yeah.
Where, you know, I brought him back into the office and I was like, what were you doing?
Right.
Like, what was that?
Right.
But if I had done that in front of the entire band, then they might have laughed, they, you know. And so now you lose this the control, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
The same way if a teacher, you know, if the head director goes after the assistant director in front
yeah.
of the entire band, whether
right,
that, you
right.
know, that'd be their ensemble or in front of the entire band and say, hey, I don't do that. Right. So now the kids are like, well, they don't know what they're doing.
Right.
So I think we need to be mindful of the things that we do in front of other kids while we're still training kids to be leaders.
Yeah.
And there's a phrase that comes to mind that I told every single one of my leaders. You know when you're going to get it? You know, like, this is when you're going to get it. I'm going to tell you when. Do you know when? No, sir. When is it? Like, by December? And I was like, no, when you graduate.
Right.
You know, and they're like, what? And I said, because this whole process. Thing, it's a process.
Yeah.
I'm here to teach you.
Exactly.
Because these skills are going to be transferred to anything, whether that be your faith organization, to college, to a trade.
I think that's super important, man, because I think what happens, like you said, at the end of the day, we're trying to gain trust. Leadership is about trust. If I'm going to follow you, it's because I trust you. Mm. It's not because I think that you know everything.
For
these kids know that we as directors don't have every answer, right? Like, we haven't been teaching that long. You know, even with some of our experiences, there's some barriers that we're like, I don't know. I have to go do some research. Let me call some older directors, and then I'll have that for you. And so if you can gain people's trust, then you can lead them anywhere. And I think leaders trust us as directors if they know that they can make mistakes and still be able to work through a rehearsal, work through a camp, whatever the case may be. And then on the back end, hey, you got to fix this. You can't do X, Y, Z. You can't do this. You can't do that. And so now they have a game plan for tomorrow because leadership is about improving day to day. You know what I'm saying? So I think the fact that we cared enough for our students, and at the end, and we're dealing with children, right? And so, yeah, they may be 16 and 17, and you feel like, oh, I need to get on them right now. What is that going to do to them when they're driving home thinking they may already feel inadequate? They may already feel like I'm not a good drum major, or why did they even pick me, right? So you have to continuously encourage, motivate, but still, hey, this needs to be done better. You don't do this well. Do this like this now.
And directors and music teachers, if you're implementing a leadership program in your schools and your programs, don't think that one training is going to create leaders.
It's not.
Quite the contrary. You need it. That's just the beginning.
Man.
You're going to have to do some, you know, bring it back in, whether it be weekly sessions. We did that. We would bring the kids in and we would talk about, what went well?
Yeah.
And every single person had to say at least one thing. Like, well, I think I did this well. I think my section did this well. Okay, what are the areas for improvement? Not what we did wrong.
Right.
So even just narrating and dictating that conversation of improvement. And just noticing, like, okay, what do we have to work on?
Right.
And I didn't know how to teach really the step off really well because, you know, I kind of just tell them how to do it. And so then we would give them feedback. Okay, cool. Hey, guys, what would you give them?
Right.
Give them some strategies.
Yeah.
So I want to let you guys in on how we did leadership at Heights. The most recently, we gave ample notice. It was already on our calendar way ahead of time saying, you know, after our last spring concert, we're going to initiate leadership training.
Yep.
And then we would have an application process. And so the application process, if you're going for a logistical position, whether that be, you know, equipment manager or secretary or librarian that didn't require instructional leadership, then you did not have to necessarily play the required pieces. And and the required pieces were our stand tunes in regards to the standards, the fight song, the alma mater, the Star Spangled Banner, and then scales. So when we started implementing that, we held the kids musically accountable on top of their leadership aspects. On top of that, before the application was due, we would stand in front of the band and encourage as many students to do it. We would literally just say, if it's a maybe or I'm thinking about it, go for it. Just go for it because you're going to become better coming out of it than you did. And so we implemented, once we took the entire application, if they submitted it on time, they were in the process.
Yeah.
So they came in through the leadership training. We did 2 weeks of leadership training. The first week, we would bring in guest speakers. We had a Marine recruiter actually come out and do stuff for them. We've had administrators come and speak about what the importance of leadership within the staff. We took turns on what it means to teach, what it means to deal with conflict, what it means to. So then we started addressing things that did not go as well the last year, like areas of improvement. Okay, we did not teach this well.
Right.
So this is going to be a target area in our leadership training.
Yes.
So my first year, I actually didn't focus too much on the teaching aspect.
Yeah.
It was literally about building the culture.
Of course.
So I made the buy-in.
Mm-hmm.
And going back to what you said in the first half of the podcast, you know, it created ownership. And so a lot of our kids come in, and the first step is just getting kids to be of compliance.
Right.
The second step is going to be of engagement. Mm-hmm. And then the last step is to give them the intrinsic motivation to want to do. And you said it, you know, very well about your kids that you had at Hamilton, that they went from those different stages of leading to, I want to do this.
Yes.
And so the people that led that sectional had the intrinsic motivation.
Right. Right.
So our training led that. And we all know they're all going for individual positions.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
But the beautiful thing that happened this past year at our banquet, when we finished announcing the leadership.
This is good.
They all swarmed the dance floor.
Man.
And hugged each other and honored and celebrated each other.
Whether they got a position or not. Like kids genuine, and you know, you got the fake humility where kids are like, oh man, I'm glad you got it. No, kids genuinely like somebody's name got called and there might have been a little, you know, oh man. But as soon as we announced it, everybody, it was just hugs, high fives, people congratulating each other. And I think that's the goal of leadership, that you create a community where people are like, man, I didn't get it, but this person got it, and I'm going to help him be successful.
Yep.
And, I mean, at the end of the day, building a band, as much as we want, we know, directors, we know what it is. You're trying to get those scores. You want those trophies, not only for yourself, but just to gain some type of legitimacy to your program. But, man, if you can really focus in on really developing people for the sake of just the growth of the band, it's going to do your band wonders. Because now you're able to now delve into more band director stuff.
Yep.
Right? So now kids are coming to the office to say, what do you need me to work on? What needs to be done? Like, kids would literally come in our office and say, what did you think of our performance today?
Yep.
What could be fixed? Like, percussionists will say, well, how did you feel like practice went today? And I'm the director, right? But how great is that for us to be having a conversation that they care about? Most of the time, kids are just glad that you said, all right, dismiss, go
for
home.
For sure.
But for them to hang around the band hall and say, I know you're not too happy with us today. We still didn't nail that set where we have to transition from halftime to, you know, go back into, you know. And so when you're able to have those conversations, there are two people that own something.
Going into the aspect of, and I'm addressing some of our colleagues that might be a one-person staff, maybe two at max.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, when we go to conventions, and I did this early on in my career, that we go see the big wigs.
Right.
And they're like, well, hey, well, I get my fourth and fifth band director to do this. And you're like, fourth and fifth?
Yeah.
So, and I'm glad that I had an optimistic mindset because I said fourth and fifth, but I don't have a fourth and fifth band director, but I got student leaders.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It might not be as good as a degreed individual,
right.
But at least I can build them up into, you know, regurgitating my shared language.
Yes.
And
yes.
Teach them how I would want them to teach. And that's going to be better than somebody not teaching them at all.
Right.
And so I love that, you know, we had the opportunity to do that. And so shameless plug to all you listeners. If you need some leadership facilitators, hit us up.
For real. We'd love to come.
We would love. That's something that I truly enjoy.
Yeah.
I had the opportunity just to work with a couple schools this past summer, and I'm actually lined up to do some things this fall with a couple more people. And I'm glad that they're doing more things in the fall, not just, you know, summer training, and they think it's done.
But
and
this so, continues.
Exactly. And I come in, and I have implemented a leadership of servitude. Mm. And so I am a firm believer that you can be, you know, revered and honored and celebrated if the people that you are leading are doing well.
Right, right.
If they're the ones putting out a quality product, then I take pride in that.
Yeah.
Because I don't think I've ever been the type of person that says me. I'm intentional about using we, us, our, because this is a collective unit.
Yeah.
And so when I empower others to do that work and I'm able to do that, And I've said this. My students know this about me. Don't thank me.
Right.
Don't thank me. I don't deserve a thank you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If anything, if you feel like you owe me something, then go do it for somebody else.
Yeah. That's good.
You know, pay it forward. And in our profession, play it forward.
Right.
And so that for me has always given me a sense of pride when I stand back and say, man, they got it.
Yeah.
Or they did it. And even when I empower, you know, young teachers and my staff, and when I see them start doing things that I know they couldn't, but I was that extra little push, like, go for it.
Mm-hmm.
You got this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so I think there's one of those things that if you don't do this well, then bring people that do.
Right.
By all means, you know.
Network.
Network, yeah. Plug, you know, hey, even your rival band director that you know you might be friends with, and say, hey, man, how about you come over and, you know, run a leadership session with me? And, you know what I mean? I'll get you some dinner and that kind of thing. And so I think one of those things that we have to really focus on is the ability of us being able to empower these young people to do more.
Yeah.
Than they
can expect.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's so big for us to an opportunity as much as the amount of time that we get to see our kids compared to the core subject teacher that they might get them for 1 year, one semester.
Right.
And so if we get to see our kids over 4 years.
Man, you're seeing kids grow up, right? And like myself and Mr. Jimenez, we both have kids and we both have little babies, little young sons. And so I'm literally watching. Shoot, I watch Mr. Jimenez's son just kind of grow up in front of me. Just like, man, he walking now. Man, he doing this.
Yep.
And so you get the same with your kids. And I think what's important and really like is the kind of like the foundation is in developing your leaders, be okay with them. Be okay with them transforming what you're teaching them into what works for them. And what I mean by that is me and Mr. Jimenez could say the same thing, but two different ways.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes we stifle our leaders because we teach them things and they learn it. And then when they don't do it the way we do it, then it's a problem. But the product is there. Kids are learning whether it's a certain way you teach a certain marching style or a certain way you want them to vocalize the warm-up or whatever, the kids are doing what the product should look like, but the leaders may be saying it different. But if we're about individuality and if we're about kids really taking ownership, then how I own it is making it applicable to me and using my language, using my culture, using some of the methodology and metaphors and things of that nature that work. Like, Ms. Jimenez has said a lot of things in the band hall that I've repeated or regurgitated, but I've just morphed it into a thing that's real for Mr. McLean.
Yeah.
So
that's you.
Yes. Yes.
I love that.
Yes.
Love that.
Yeah.
Wrap it up. What you got? What are you going to give some people here? What are some takeaways?
Man, guys, if you want your band to take ownership, you have to give it to them. And you gotta seek out people that are hard workers but are rough around the edges. And don't be afraid to invest in people that may not be the loudest voice in the room, because you'd be surprised at how much more of an impact and more of change that they'll have on your band program for years to come. Not just for that first year that they're in their program, or maybe they're a senior and they're graduating. Man, if you really empower these kids to lead one another, to own one another and push each other, man, it just becomes culture and it becomes the DNA of your program.
Establishing culture, and it starts with leadership.
Yeah. Yeah,
it starts
perfect.
With them.
Yeah.
It starts. And so if you are willing to take on this role and understand the impact that you have on your students, you're going to see some awesome results. And for me, I've been honored and privileged to have student leaders that are now in the workforce, that are now in the military, that are now pursuing a higher education. And then I can remember to the times when they were a freshman or a sophomore in my leadership training, where they would ask me dumb questions like, "Hey, Mr. Jimenez, you know where the cooler's at? Have you looked for it?" Well, no, I was just asking you. Well, go look for it. I mean, I was, you know, tough around the edges in regards to my expectation, but I remember colleagues coming in and then a drum major coming in and saying, "Mr. Jimenez, are we going to have the car wash this weekend?" "Yeah, let's go ahead and do it." "Okay, sir, I'm going to schedule it. I'm going to make sure that everybody knows and da-da-da-da." And I can think of assigning tasks to students that does not require a degree. And we sat down and we would debrief and saying, okay, let's talk about what needs to be done before even band camp starts. Okay, let's check off what requires a degree and let's delegate what we have everything else. Who's going to take care of what? And as a facilitator of these leaders, I had to go and just ensure, hey, you gotten that done? Have you turned it in? Have you been able to do that? And so being able to recognize untapped talent, to be able to pour into kids and expose them to leadership skills, qualities, it starts with you.
Yeah.
You have to model that.
Yep.
You have to exemplify that. And if you don't, and if you make a mistake, admit that you made a mistake and keep working at it. Because if you're a first-year teacher or you're a seasoned veteran, we all make mistakes. And when the kids see you are honest, upfront, of integrity, then they're going to continue to follow you and push your narrative and push your vision for your programs.
For sure.
This has been another production of The Score. Connect with us on social media at Pod The Score. Send us an email, podthescore@gmail.com or visit our website, revivalmusicproject.org. If you've enjoyed this episode, do us a huge favor. Rate and review us. This will help us reach even more listeners. Intro music by Justin McLean. The rotation and outro music by Ben Borges. And as always, let's continue to impact these lives through the vehicle of music.